Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. You know, it's always fun to talk about science with our next guest, Bassam Shakashiri, back with us. He's an emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, a national proponent for science and education. Always great to have him with us. And we'll talk about Earth Day a bit today. We can talk about artificial intelligence. We'll take a look at science research funding and, of course, a whole lot more. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Are you curious about science? How do you learn more about science in everyday life? But Sam has some answers for you, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. But Sam, always great to have you with us. Thanks for joining in.
It's always good to be with you, Larry, and the wonderful listening audience that we have. I'm looking forward to this conversation, and I want to salute you for so many different programs that you organize and lead that help connect science with society. Many of your guests talk about health issues. The weather guys are coming up next. Garden talk. Science permeates everything that we do in society, and you are an outstanding proponent of meaningful conversations. And I'm so proud and happy that you have been elected as a fellow of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Letters, and the Arts. Congratulations, Larry.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a big honor, and I appreciate your thoughts. I really do.
You deserve it, and we've all benefited from your leadership in this regard. Thank you, Larry, and let's engage our audience in conversations this morning about what you said: budget cuts, Earth Day, and if you're okay with it, I'd like to ask the audience a question.
Sure.
What is the one thing that you can think about that distinguishes society today from society, say, 50 years ago or 100 years ago or even 500 years ago? What's the one thing that we have in society today that distinguishes us from societies 50, 100 years ago or so? And I'd like the audience to, if they have thoughts about this, to share with us, in addition to sharing what you have already asked to tell us about how they celebrated Earth Day.
You know, I was thinking about Earth Day because that was 1970, April of 1970, the first one. We covered it. I can remember over the years talking with Senator Nelson, Gaylord Nelson, about Earth Day, and of course a host of other people. What's the significance of Earth Day?
It's a great marker for all of us to consider the environment we live in and the awesome responsibility that we have to sustain and maintain the quality of the environment. It is really up to us to do that. We can contribute to its well-being. We can contribute to its destruction. And we have to be thoughtful, careful, informed, and making joint decisions about what we do in this beautiful planet that we live on. It's crucial that we all engage in meaningful, respectful conversations about the environment and how it enables us to enjoy the quality of life that we have. Even though the environment is now somewhat threatened by our overuse of fossil fuels. I know that's a debatable point, but let's debate it with respect. Let's talk about it, and let's see how we can together work, not only on Earth Day, not only the whole week, but every day of the year, talk about and discuss and make decisions, informed decisions, respectful conversations about the quality of life on our planet. That's what Earth Day means to me. And I will tell you, Larry, and tell everyone who's listening, having Earth Day in 1970 was a major factor, not the only one, but a major factor for my moving from the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana to the University of Wisconsin, where I felt there is openness and commitment and dedication to support and enjoy the environment that we live in.
I did not know that, Bissam, that you'd moved from, that was a one of the reasons why you moved from Illinois to here. It's great for me to learn that. Did you do anything special for Earth Day?
I do something special every day because I feel every day is Earth Day. Taking care of the immediate surroundings that I live in, using less pesticides on the lawn, feeding the birds, enjoying the beauty of the setting that we have in the upper Midwest here. It's really a wonderful setting for all of us. And Larry, there's beauty in science, there's beauty on our planet. Just think of the bead of water on a blade of grass in the morning. And it sticks there. It doesn't just wash away. Think about the science that's involved, how it sticks there. It remains a bead until it evaporates. And if the sun shines on it and you're at the right angle looking at it, you see colors. All of these aspects help arouse curiosity and help us understand the complexity and the beauty of the wonderful world that we live in. So as I say, Earth Day is every day for me, but it is important for us collectively to mark it annually and to remember the commitment that led Governor Nelson and others, the people elected officials, to establish Earth Day and also establish the Environmental Protection Agency. All of these things happened in the early 70s, and it is incumbent upon us now to maintain the purposes for which we have these federal and state and municipal agencies that help improve the quality of life.
Yeah. And we had a couple of nice emails. Kay emailed to share how she celebrated Earth Day. Kay and 18 of her work colleagues participated in their 10th annual litter pickup event along a local highway sponsored by Adopt a Highway program here in Dane County. Nice thing to do. Reed in Blanchardville emailed he celebrated Earth Day a few days early at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, where retired meteorologist Bob Limbaugher spoke on solving the climate crisis. And during the main ritual, he read Aldo Leopold's Letter to a Wildflower Digger.
Thank you, Kay, and thank you, Reed. And please do what you did to mark and celebrate Earth Day. Please do it every day, and let us all try not to litter our environment so that Kay and others would have to pick them up. Let's be responsible in the action that we take as we enjoy the beauty and try to understand the complexity of the beautiful world that we live in.
Bissam Shakashiri, our guest, comments, questions for him. I hope you'll give a call. The number 800-642-1234. You could email, like Reed and Kay did, at talk@WPR.org. Let's talk about the, you mentioned the Environmental Protection Agency. What role do they play in the care and keeping of our environment, I guess we could say?
I think EPA has played a very important role since the 1970s, and the role has been to try to use and enforce regulations that protect water quality, air quality, the Clean Air Act, for example. All of these federal responsible action items should be continued and should be examined and should be subscribed to, and it can be modified. But Larry, to completely stop doing that is not incumbent upon us. It is really incumbent upon us to understand what the EPA goals are and what the responsible action by individuals and by all of us collectively in government, outside of government. So I look to the EPA, I've always looked to the EPA as being not only a guide, but to help promote better understanding of our stewardship of the planet that we live on. So that's the feeling that I have about the EPA. And nowadays, there are proposals going to the Congress that would limit the role of the EPA. Perhaps we can talk about that. But I want to try to emphasize the importance of all of us participating in the democratic processes that we have so we can improve our own understanding of the beautiful world we live in, but also try to have responsible regulations and responsible behavior by individuals, by all of us collectively.
Mike in Madison has a comment for us. Let's go there. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. It was very memorable for me. I'm 93 years old. My daughter and I marched down State Street on the very first Earth Day. She had a teacher in middle school who emphasized the environment. And I just wanted to compliment educators, what you people do. I've seen so many changes brought about by education about the environment, like smoking and things like that. So the education profession in our society is, I think, the most powerful tool we've got.
Mike,
Thank you, Mike, for your call and for what you said and what I hope you'll continue to do. It's important for us to become educated so we learn, but it's more important for us to act accordingly. So education is about learning, of course, and that's very joyful. But action is what really, responsible action is what really makes the difference, whether it is related to the environment or any other aspect, any other dimension of our daily life. So thank you, Mike, for doing that. And please, please tell others what you just said and in your own local community and everywhere else that you can. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks very much, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. Judy in Fitchburg emailed us to answer your question that you raised earlier. Judy says, today, public health decisions are based on evidence or science rather than old wives' tales and the advice of frauds. At least that was true until we have folks within the administration denying the science of vaccines, actually not telling the truth about the effectiveness of COVID and other vaccines.
Well, thank you, Julie. We should, related to what you emailed, we should engage in these meaningful, respectful conversations with each other locally, but also with our elected officials to see to it that the changes that are contemplated are being done for the common good, for the good of all of society. So, yes, science is the answer. I don't want to preempt others from answering my question, but I just reduce it for the time being. Science is what distinguishes our society now from all previous society. I say science and its twin, technology. They're not quite the same thing. They're not the same thing. So we know more because we explored. And we try to use the knowledge that we acquire after sharing it through education and other means too. We try to use it for the benefit of the planet and its inhabitants. As I say, science and its twin technology. All of technology is created by human beings. All the technology is created by human beings. And technology is very helpful to us, is very useful to us. But there are aspects and important dimensions of technology that can also cause harm. And so that's why we have to be thoughtful. We have to be purposeful in using the results of scientific explorations, scientific discoveries that become technological innovations, so the technological innovations are helpful to us rather than being destructive.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, he is an emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, one of our regular guests here. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking science and science education today with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri, emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. Thoughts for Bassam, as we've talked a little about AI, we've talked about Earth Day, we've taken a little bit of a look at the Environmental Protection Agency. What's on your mind? Give a call, the number 800-642-1234, or email to talk at WPR.org. Had an email from Marie, who was born in 1946. She's always curious about science, but and you were talking about technology and so forth, and she worries we seem to be facing a coordinated anti-science campaign, she says, by people and corporations who don't want the public to understand the difference between real research and baseless claims, and feels that social media amplifies this through influencers who deliberately spread misinformation. She seems to think we are going backwards towards an age of pseudoscience, and feels she was lucky to be educated at a time when public schools were teaching real science.
Well, Marie, thank you for your comments. And we do teach real science in schools and colleges and universities. We teach real science in museums, in botanical gardens. I understand your concern about the behavior and the attitude that we now learn about. That is something of great concern to all of us. So this relates to the fact that public support for research, for science, for education in all areas is facing what some have correctly characterized as a perilous threat. Is our peril if we don't really engage, as I have said already, and I would like to repeat it, in meaningful, respectful conversations with each other at the local level, at the state level, at the federal level, so that the matters that are really important to the well-being of the planet and the inhabitants of the planet are addressed properly and correctly. Our political system allows, it invites all of us to take responsible action, to raise our voice, to vote in every election. And my call is to say that again. I'd like everyone, Marie and everyone, to raise your voice, vote in every election. And I add respectfully, please recruit at least 5 eligible voters who have not voted before in the municipal elections, in the midterm elections, in the presidential elections, in all elections. I think the fullness of our participation in the democratic institutions that we belong to and that we cherish is crucial to societal progress, and science is a key element in making this progress. Thank you, Marie.
was thinking about the newscast just before the show, where it was reported that in a few elections here in Wisconsin, the local elections, folks were voted in by 4 or 5 votes, something like that, only 4 or 5 votes. I don't know what the percentage of voters was at that time, but in this last election, but your vote, when you hear, oh my gosh, I didn't vote, and the person I would have supported lost by 4 votes, that every vote means something.
Yes, indeed, and this is my call, Larry. It's not the first time I talk about it. Excuse me. With you and our listening audience, it is crucial that we participate fully in the democratic institutions that we belong to. And so for the person who was elected with 4 votes over the opponent, we should converse with that person. It's not only the size of the margin. It is the totality of the voter turnout that is important. And that's why we have to talk to not only voters, all of us, we have to talk to each other as voters, but also talk with people who are not yet eligible to vote. So when they get to be 18 years old, they will have a feeling, they'll have an understanding of what voting is for, what's it about, and they can make intelligent selections for the people that they vote for. So voting is crucial to our democratic institutions.
Let's take a call from Chris in Fairchild next. Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining in.
Good afternoon. So my comment concern here is that I am desperate to come up with a meaningful way of engaging in dialogue, of working on large community projects. In one aspect, most environmentalists would advocate for things like hydroelectric dams or clean power, better transmission lines, or even high-speed rail. But then when it comes time to implement, the same group that I'm working with to move these projects forward then seem to argue against the same projects, saying environmental impacts. So what's a meaningful way to engage in dialogue to come to a middle ground to move these projects forward? I'd like to point out simply like high-speed rail throughout California, which has taken 20 years. It's not even yet complete. So what's a good meaning? Middle ground to dialogue.
Thank you, Chris, for what you're doing and for wanting to do more. It's important that in having these conversations among ourselves, that we listen to what the other people are saying. Not that we necessarily agree, but we listen so that we have a conversation about the economic consequences of environmental protection. We have conversations about what does it really mean to have environmental protection. I think the acquisition of knowledge and it's being shared is important for people to develop their own attitudes and eventually their behavior. Attitude and behavior go with each other. Attitude affects behavior. Behavior is influenced by attitude. So it's a continuing process, Chris. That means that we listen to each other. And as I have said on many occasions in conversing about any topic, the first purpose of a conversation is to have another conversation. It's very important that we continue this so that we collectively reach and make decisions that are for the common good. And that requires us being respectful of each other as fellow human beings. I'm not saying you necessarily respect the ideas and what else somebody else is saying, but you respect each other as fellow human beings. This element of respect is crucial now, and it relates to another important dimension: trust. people talk about loss of trust. Well, we have to engage with each other. It's not only about science, but we have to engage with each other about a variety of the societal topics that we're engaged in. So, Chris, please keep talking as you have suggested you're doing, and urge others to converse as well. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks very much, Chris, for calling. Appreciate your call. And by the way, you can join in too. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Some recent news articles on funding for science have been not positive, I guess we could say.
Larry, they're for sure not positive. You're talking about funding at the federal level? Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The proposed budget for the next fiscal year that the White House sent to the Congress was released earlier this month. And it calls for severe cuts to the National Science Foundation. The National Science Foundation is an independent agency within our federal government that supports scientific research and science education at all educational levels. The proposed budget for the next fiscal year, and the Congress will have to act on this before it becomes law, the proposal from the White House is to cut $4 billion, which is over 55% of the present budget, which has supported in this year and in previous years all kinds of accomplishments and innovations. They go back to magnetic resonance imaging. They go back to matters related to healthcare. So this is a very severe and I would say potentially very damaging if it stays if this is 50% cut stays. It will severely weaken our ability as a nation to generate new fundamental scientific knowledge and cutting edge scientific breakthroughs that have served our country for developments and innovations of new industries in biotechnology, in information technology, the internet, artificial intelligence. And so it is crucial that we try to understand and work together to make sure that these cuts do not happen, because they will affect the quality of research, the number of young people going into science, number of young people going into engineering, into all areas related to science and technology. It's very, very important that we look at this very carefully and do what it needs to make sure that adequate federal funding will continue so that we are able to stand up to other countries that are copying what we did in the past 50 years in terms of supporting young people, supporting research innovations, and now to put us into a perilous situation like this is not to be allowed. Is what I say.
I was reading a report, a story, I think it was in the Washington Post, a scientist talking about it, and this person seemed to think that it looks like the basic idea is to take away the research, to privatize all of the research, and was really concerned about that because private corporations would, of course, do the research on the areas where they would make the most money, I mean, logically. And that leaves open the door for a lot of the research that has been done by our universities and other institutions of research that have been funded on a governmental level that have created so many beneficial things that would not have been possible had the funding not been there.
Yes, this the federal government has for decades supported inquiry and research that is curiosity driven. It's the question is what is the funding for? Is the funding for supporting research or for procuring research? A private industry is most welcome to provide support for research, but as you correctly pointed out, Larry, it might be for specific purposes with strings attached, and those have to be examined very carefully. So the largesse of the American people through their elected officials has enabled great scientific breakthroughs that were not mission-oriented. They were curiosity-driven research activities. I mentioned magnetic resonance image, MRI. The list is a very long list. So support from the federal government is to be for curiosity-driven scientific research. It tries to satisfy our yearning to understand the complexity of the world that we live in. And then from that comes applications and comes innovations and comes implementation to in technological and otherwise, medical and otherwise, to improve the quality of life on the planet.
Tim in Monona has a question, I believe, for you. Let's go there. Tim, hi. Thank you for joining in.
Hey, thank you, Larry. And Bassam, it's an honor to speak with you. I've listened to you for years and have great respect for you. I'm very glad to speak with you. But what I would like to mention is that it seems to me that at least politically, Americans don't understand the difference between science and applied science. And they don't seem to understand that, you know, when these amounts of money are required to find out something that is really needed to know, it seems like they're incredibly expensive. But compared to the knowledge we had before, look back 50, 100 years. It just worries me that the government is mostly concerned with what we can do with it to get our power and less concerned with knowledge. I await your comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. And I was going to say, at the risk of repeating some of the things I said already, I want to repeat them. This is where education is crucial to understand the and to learn about scientific discoveries, and then also learn how they can be used effectively to help the quality of life that we have on the planet. So education is key. A public understanding of science and technology and the difference between science and technology is also important. So this is not a time for me to point fingers and to fix blames, because that doesn't help. What we need to do is continue to empower our educational institutions at a grade school level, high school, colleges, universities, empower them so that they not only train, but also educate people who can engage in meaningful research activities, in meaningful technological applications of the research, but also in meaningful conversations with everyone in society about the value and the meaning for which these advances can be helpful to the entire society. And that's not happening now. I think there is the dialogue. There's no even dialogue happening now. And so for those of us who really care about being citizens of Wisconsin, citizens of the United States, that we should take it upon ourselves to engage in meaningful, respectful conversations so that, and we listen to others, even though we may disagree with what they're saying, but we listen, and that will help them listen to us. So that's what I say, Tim, is what we should try to do.
Thank you again. Let's turn to Tom in Viroqua next. Tom, hello.
Yes, thank you, Larry, and good to talk to Dr. Sarasari. My question is that throughout much of Wisconsin, one of the major both environmental and economic problems or discussions is regarding the infrastructure need for these large data centers that are being proposed. Even though the power generation or the power lines are not being driven by our own, you know, Wisconsin personal needs, there's not the demand for that. And what I question is, given what we know from Moore's Law, that the technology and the speed and the power of the chips and the things for which these huge power demands are being built now, you know, in 2 years' time, they double in speed and efficiency. And so by the time these data centers are built, the technology they're designed around is going to be out of date. And I just see many of these things being built and us putting all this infrastructure in to support them. And then they're just going to fold and close up like Hutchinson Technologies did up in Eau Claire after we subsidized that whole process.
Hmm.
Thank you, Tom. All of technology is a result of basic research in science. All the technological advances are the result of that, and they have consequences. They have economic consequences. They have personal consequences. They have environmental consequences. All of these should be looked at because, as you say, the rate of advancing science and technology is very rapid, and we have to be purposeful and thoughtful about what we enact as legislation, what we put as regulations to help us, not only for today, but for tomorrow. And so working together, and I'd like to say at this time, Tom, that those of us in science and in technology should connect better with others in society. We talk with each other at scientific conferences and scientific meetings and through the scientific literature. We understand each other, but we need to share what we are advocating, what we want others in society outside of science to think about. And just like you said, things change at a rapid pace. Okay, what about that? Does that mean we should stop these changes? No. It means that we should be adaptable and we should be careful and considerate as to what the consequences of these changes will be, not only today, but tomorrow and day after tomorrow.
Thanks again, Tom, for calling. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller, talking science today with Bassam Shakashiri. At the top of the hour today, we'll turn our attention to the weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Looking forward to that. But right now, Bassam Shakashiri with us. And we have callers online. Let's take some of those calls. Tom and McQuantico, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi, Larry. Thanks so much for having the show and for such a long-time relationship with the professor. He's been one of my favorite guests on yours over the years. What I wanted to bring up was the problems with funding in research for our research universities now. I'm very fortunate to have a daughter who, by the way, did her undergrad at wonderful UW in Madison, who is now a professor at Penn State, a genetics professor. One of the problems she's having this year is being able to recruit postdocs and graduate students to work in her lab because of various funding problems they're having with the NIH. That's where she gets most of her funding. So how do we get the public to realize the importance of this funding and the importance of this research? It is actually life-changing research that people are doing.
Mm.
Thank you, Tom, for your call, and I encourage you and your daughter and all fellow scientists and people in technology to share what the research that's being done is about and the importance of getting young people to continue in their research endeavors. Postdoctoral fellows, graduate students, undergraduates engaging in research. We need to provide meaningful support, financial support for that to continue to happen. So that's one point I mentioned. All of us should be engaged in helping the public understand more and better what the research is. I don't mean the specific details, technical details. I mean the consequences of that research. So that's one point. The other point is that we in science and technology have to do a better job at sharing not only the joy of what we do to satisfy our own curiosity, but the consequences and the importance of scientific research to society. That is something that is not happening as much as it should happen. And some people say, well, I'm not very good at it. Well, we can help each other to become better at it. Some people say, it's not my job. Well, I disagree with that. I would want to have a conversation with a person that says, it's not my job to tell the public about what I'm doing. It is your job to tell, it's part of your job to tell the public about what you're doing. So I am trying very carefully here not to point the finger so much at the scientific and technological communities, but I think we tend to keep ourselves talking with each other, and we do a good job at that. We understand each other, but we have to develop a better sense of appreciation on the part of the public at large as to what the scientific research is about and how long it takes to get scientific discoveries to become technological innovations, or the whole process of being alive and being engaged in meaningful conversations with each other is what I advocate and what I talk about.
Tom, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it very much. John in Maple will turn to you. John, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, I've listened to your show since forever, I guess, and I've always enjoyed hearing from Dr. Shaqshiri. And I respect his opinions. 99% agree with what he has to say, but I'm finding it very hard to find a respectful way to approach what I want to call the opposition that we see right now, because what they're doing, what they're saying, what they're up to is totally malicious. It's self-serving. It's falsehood. They know it's falsehood. And I have a heck of a hard time being respectful in discussions with those people. I'm 83 years old. Maybe my patience is worn out.
Okay.
John, I share your pain. I share your feeling. And that's why we have to take a deep breath and and try different tactics, different strategies. There's so much at stake here. The consequences will affect those that disagree with what you want to do, what you want the country to do. The consequences will affect everybody. Yes, please understand that my plea for respectful conversations requires patience, understanding, more patience, and it has to be a set of conversations based on knowledge and knowing what one is advocating for. So, yes, I fully and deeply understand your comments and the tone in which you shared this with us, and that's why I make this appeal. Let's step back half a step and reconsider what we've been doing to communicate with each other. It's not only about science, John. It's not only about technology. It's about our discourse with each other as civilized individuals and groups that I think will make the difference. And this is where quality of education is also important, as I mentioned already.
John, thank you. And Terry wonders, how can scientists do a better job of communicating their discoveries to the public?
Well, we have a great deal of expert support from science communicators. Larry, you're in the life science department, right? Larry, you and your program on the air reach a variety of different opinions in the listening audience. So having responsible conversations, I keep emphasizing the word responsible, so we have to do this. And if what's available to us right now is not sufficiently effective, we have to be creative and inventive in doing it. And we have to be patient with each other. Just because someone doesn't understand clearly what the details of a scientific discovery are, it doesn't mean we should give up on trying to share the consequences of discovery. It's not so much the technical details that are discussed at a scientific meeting. It's the consequences. So that's what scientists and technologists, I think, should become better at.
And here we are, we're in our last minute, and here we are celebrating 250 years. How should we be celebrating it?
We should celebrate it with the joy of accomplishment that we have made, and we should celebrate it with care, so we avoid making mistakes that were made in the past. We should mark our Independence Day and the circumstances that led to our country's independence, but live it in the 21st century, to live now and be open and free and be willing to engage in conversations, meaningful conversations, respectful conversations, despite the difficulty that some of us encounter in this regard. This is how we mark the freedom that we have in America. America is an idea that is going to continue to live, not just exist, to live, because we will live it.
But Sam, it's always a pleasure. Look forward to your next visit. In the meantime, thank you so much for being with us today. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Thanks much.
Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at the UW-Madison, our guest. Always great to have him with us. Sorry we didn't get to everybody's comments, but that's kind of the way it goes sometimes here. Coming up, a look at weather and climate with our weather guys. I'm Larry Mueller.